everyone. It is time to read the Des Moines Register for this Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of Iowans with a print disability. I'm Dennis May, and my partner at the microphone for the next 90 minutes is Barb DeHeck. For the first hour, we'll cover local and national news from the Des Moines Register and USA Today. Our second hour starts with birthdays and obituaries, followed by opinions, sports, and lifestyle news. We'll wrap up our broadcast with Dear Abby. Support for today's readings comes from the Des Moines Register and donations from individuals and listeners like you. Learn how you can keep the volunteer voices of IRIS going strong at iowaradioreading.org. And now let's take a look at the weather and the headlines from today's Des Moines Register. Our statewide AccuWeather forecast calls for a very windy day today with flurries to the east and in the south, with the winds from the north-northwest at 30 to 40 miles per hour. The forecast for Des Moines calls for a high today of 52 with a low of 34, with the winds gusting upwards of 50 miles an hour and some partial sunshine. On Thursday, a high of 49 with a low of 31, breezy in the morning. So it's going to be winds will be gusting across the area today at up to 50 miles per hour. Across our crazy weather in the United States, yesterday it was 90 degrees in Corpus Christi, Texas, and 9 degrees at Lake Yellowstone, Wyoming. Now, turning to the headlines in today's Des Moines Register, on the front page is a very large photo titled Clark Leads Hawkeyes Back to Final Four. It's a photo of Caton Clark standing on a ladder at the hoop of the regional finals where she has cut a piece off the net, and she has her mouth open yelling and her hand up to her ears for the crowd to acknowledge their victory. And the photo caption reads, University of Iowa basketball star Caitlin Clark cuts down the net after the Hawkeyes beat Louisiana State University in the Elite Eight round of the NCAA tournament on Monday in Albany, New York. Iowa will play Connecticut in the Final Four at 8:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time Friday in Cleveland. Other headlines on the front page, Des Moines to put revitalization cash into three more neighborhoods, and House OK's plan to overhaul state's mental health services. And to get us started with today's Des Moines Register, as always, here's Barb.
Thank you, Dennis. Des Moines to put revitalization cash into three more neighborhoods. The Union Park, Northrop Grand, and Woodland Heights neighborhoods will soon be eligible for a slew of targeted revitalization grants. The Des Moines City Council approved a recommendation Monday by InvestDSM to adopt two new special investment districts that will encompass the neighborhoods. The nonprofit helps finance home renovations, encourage businesses to make improvements, and jumpstart major projects in areas that have seen neglect. Once a neighborhood is selected, it can access InvestDSM resources for 10 years. InvestDSM is currently finalizing plans for a mixed-use development at the site of the former Highland Apartments in Highland Park, Oak Park, another special investment district that is in the midst of numerous new business openings. Knowing that InvestDSM exists and wants to glow up our neighborhoods, we're very enthusiastic about it, said Marshall James, president of the Northrop Grand Neighborhood Association. Between that and the overall Ingersoll improvements going on, it's pushing the character of our neighborhood to be more friendly for families and walkers. That's what we want. InvestDSM's original mission was to focus on middle market neighborhoods, selecting projects based on the potential for success and the biggest return on investment. In addition to Highland Park, Oak Park, the city's pilot neighborhoods for the program, chosen in 2019, were Drake, Franklin, and Columbus Park. The city created InvestDSM the same year to facilitate funding. Now, in addition to North Grand and neighboring Woodland Heights, city planner Anupret Minhas said the organization is giving its attention to a softer area on the city's map, Union Park, where 30% of homes are in poor or very poor condition, and 62% are average. No residents have taken part in Des Moines City Block Challenge Grant, a program that helps pay for exterior home improvement projects, in which participation is usually an indicator of whether a neighborhood is ready to be a special investment district. West Union Park has seen InvestDSM Executive Director Amber Lynch said, is a wide range of engagement and other community activities, including the Porch Fest Festival, beginning in 2022, which invites visitors to stroll through the neighborhood and listen to musicians performing on residents' front porches. Willingness to participate in things that are about the community, that's something we're looking for, Lynch said. That's what we're all about. North of Grand and Woodland Heights are more predictable additions to Invest DSM's roster. Their selection reflects the success of Ingersoll as a commercial corridor, Lynch said. Just 14% of the homes are in poor condition and 62% average. The area has also seen strong participation in the City Block Challenge. Ingersoll is really becoming an asset that the city can be proud of, and we want to make sure that the housing stock around it remains strong so that we can protect all of that, Lynch said. Funds will become available after a year-long planning process. Invest DSM will first meet with residents and business owners to identify what neighborhoods want to see improved. Despite DSM's success stories, one council member, Joe Gatto, expressed disappointment that the group hasn't included any of the neighborhoods on his South Side Ward 4 in his newest plans. Gatto has long called for the area to see the same targeted investments being made in other areas of the city. Columbus Park, one of the original special investment districts, was in Ward 4, but transitioned into Ward 3 in the latest round of council redistricting. Gatto asked for discussion on having a neighborhood on the south side added within the next 12 months. I'm hoping we look at it sooner rather than later, he said. Lynch told the Des Moines Register that the nonprofit was ready to take on only two new investment areas. Invest DSM oversees up to 700 projects a year and is run by a staff of 8. On the other side of things, the southeast side of Des Moines has newer housing compared with some of the rest of the city. Easter Lake is newer construction from the last 20 years or so and doesn't need to be revitalized yet, she said. We're focusing at the moment on early 1900s housing stock. The Franklin and Drake neighborhoods are both poised to meet the city's goals for revitalization, with Invest DSM noting the high participation in already existing financial capacity. Franklin is expected to graduate from its special investment district designation ahead of schedule, although the property assessments Invest Des Moines uses to measure some of its success won't be updated until 2025. Invest DSM plans to stay the course in the Columbus, Oak, and Highland Park neighborhoods, where commercial projects have taken off, while residential ones lag. We're still earning the trust of residents, Lynch told the city council members. It's going to take a little bit longer than in Drake and Franklin, but we need to keep going.
Our next article on the front page of today's Des Moines Register, House OK's plans to overhaul state's mental health services. This bill brings to fruition the final piece, in my mind, of our behavioral health design that we started many years ago here at the State House, said Representative Joel Fry, Republican from Osceola. Iowa House lawmakers have approved a plan to overhaul the state's mental health and disability service systems, sending one of Governor Reynolds' priority pieces of legislation to the Senate. House File 2673 merges 32 local regions charged with overseeing mental health and substance abuse treatment into 7 unified districts, while placing disability services under the jurisdiction of the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services. The bill passed the House Tuesday on a vote of 88-6. If unchanged and approved by the Senate, it will go to Reynolds' desk for her signature. The proposal, another step in the governor's years-long blueprint to reshape Iowa state government, aims to improve a system that both state officials and advocates agree is badly fractured. This bill brings to fruition the final piece, in my mind, of our behavioral health redesign that we started many years ago here at the State House, said Representative Joel Fry, Republican from Osceola. Some advocates who have requested further details on the overhaul are concerned that key services and programs, including one that links mental health services with police, where crisis intervention experts step in to respond to mental health-related calls, rather than law enforcement officers alone, could be disrupted as the system transitions. Anytime a system changes, we worry most about the people we are covering, our employees, and the need to maintain the continuity of care to our clients, Flora Schmidt, Executive Director of the Iowa Behavioral Health Association, previously told the Register. Each of the new districts would be governed by a state-appointed entity, either a public or a private group, and advised by a 10-person council of elected officials, local constituents, health professionals, and law enforcement. House lawmakers made several tweaks to Reynolds' original proposal, including a requirement that the system provide specialized services with a focus on at-risk populations. That includes children, individuals with disabilities, older adults, pregnant women, and low-income people, according to the bill. Youth would also have representation on each health district's advisory council under changes made to the plan. One member of the 10-person council would represent children and adolescents. A law enforcement representative would also sit on each council. For-profit private groups would also be allowed to serve as the governing entity for a district under an amendment unanimously approved by the House Tuesday. Previously, the bill allowed only public or private nonprofit groups to be appointed. The bill would repeal several boards and commissions, including the state's Commission on Aging, which serves as the policymaking body for programs serving senior Iowans, and it replaces it with a new Council on Health and Human Services.
And turning to the Metro and Iowa section, the Senate okays a bill to shield pesticide makers. Pesticide manufacturers will be protected from lawsuits stemming from their products' labeling under a bill advancing through the Iowa legislature. Legislation approved by the Senate Tuesday and under consideration in the House will permit a pesticide label to have sufficient warning so long as it complies with federal regulations. The bill, backed by Bayer, aims to protect the company and others like it from lawsuits accusing their products of not adequately warning of potential health issues, including cancer. Officials from Bayer argued that the company's labels comply with Environmental Protection Agency regulations. That includes their subsidiary, Monsanto's Roundup, a weed killer produced in Muscatine that was a subject of thousands of lawsuits claiming it caused cancer and led to an $11 billion settlement in 2020. Craig Mitchell, a lobbyist with Bayer, called the measure a labeling bill, saying there are no dollar caps on lawsuits and we can still be sued for anything else. Advocate groups disagreed with Bayer's interpretation of the legislation, arguing it would effectively cut off members of the public from an array of legal options. Some of these other torts that he's talking about, like general negligence, all include a component or an element of a warning, said Kelly Pesci with the Iowa Association of Justice. If this legislation was signed into law, it takes that off the table, so we can't bring any other claims. The Senate version of the measure, Senate File 2412, passed on a 30-19 vote. Four Republicans joined Democrats in opposition. Republicans defended the pesticides as critical for the agricultural industry, accusing Democrats and opponents of distorting the intent of the bill and arguing that companies will still be liable in real injury lawsuits. All we're saying is you can't be sued for following the law, so you may sell your product in our country, said Senate President Amy Sinclair, Republican of Allerton. It's that. It's not anything beyond that. And Senator Jeff Adler, Republican of State Center, said the slew of lawsuits had driven up costs of their products for farmers. These companies are being sued for billions of dollars based on an issue, a label, they have zero control over, Adler said. Democrats slammed the legislation as a defense of corporate greed, accusing Republicans of prioritizing agribusiness companies over constituents. This, in my view, is anti-Iowa bill, said Senator Janice Weiner, Democrat of Iowa City. It's an anti-farmer bill. It's arguably a pro-cancer bill. Senator Nate Bolton, Democrat of Des Moines, dismissed Republican suggestions that other legal avenues would remain available with a new liability protection. The idea that all these claims can get to survive because somehow, some way, you can prove without pointing it back to the duty to warn is fantastical, Bolton said. A House committee was initially set to advance House Study Bill 737 for floor debate Tuesday, but the chair said it was still a subject of negotiation among Republicans. We're still working through some questions on the bill for some people that have hesitations, but it's still a live round, said Republican Bobby Kaufman, Republican of Wilton. The pesticide at issue is Roundup, a weed killer commonly used on crops in Iowa and elsewhere, and also produced in Muscatine. Its active ingredient, glyphosate, has been subject to intense scrutiny after the France-based International Agency for Research on Cancer in 2015 classified it as a probably human carcinogen. That led to thousands of lawsuits, and in 2020 resulted in an $11 billion settlement. A regulatory review from the EPA in 2020 reaffirmed the agency's stance on glyphosate, finding that it was not a carcinogen. Bayer has pointed to that determination in defending their labeling on Roundup. The bill passed by the Senate on Tuesday exempts Chinese-based companies from label protections after lawmakers expressed concern about including the state-owned company ChemChina.
Iowa DNR plans to do away with rangers at state parks. They would all become conservation officers. Iowa state parks will no longer have park rangers under a new alignment plan being executed by the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Rangers at Iowa's 69 state parks all will gradually be classified as conservation officers assigned to one or more counties, rather than assigned to a specific state park or parks, the department confirmed. Under alignment, state park managers and natural resource technicians will exclusively handle state park operations, allowing DNR sworn peace officers to solely focus on law enforcement tasks, Iowa DNR spokeswoman Tammy Krausman said in an email. But park advocates say the change will mean reduced law enforcement presence at state parks, which in the summer becomes hubs of activity that can involve overconsumption of alcohol, unsafe boating, and criminal activity. Anywhere there is alcohol, law enforcement needs a presence, and it needs to be known, especially when you're out in the middle of nowhere, said Don Bill, president of Friends of Pilot Knob, a group that supports Pilot Knob State Park in north central Iowa. Even though the Iowa DNR is making changes according to an alignment plan, when the Gazette asked for a copy, Krausman said the plan was still a draft, which makes it not subject to public disclosure under Iowa's open records law. A sworn law enforcement officer, Let's just ask, what is a park ranger? Well, as sworn law enforcement officers, park rangers for decades also have been jacks of all trades who do everything from repairing buildings and overseeing mowing to educating the public about invasive species and cracking down on out-of-control parties at campgrounds. The Iowa DNR told rangers in 2022 that they had to move out of 26 state-owned houses in state parks, saying the upkeep was too costly. That meant instead of being on site for busy weekends, rangers could live as far away as 20 miles. But rangers have continued to have responsibility to specific parks where they spend most of their days. It's because of Pilot Knob Ranger Michael Strausser that his state park has a friends group, which helps with programming and raising money for the park that celebrates its 100th anniversary this year. Quote, "I've been camping out at Pilot Knob forever," said Bill, who lives in Clear Lake. "We started in a tent, went to a pop-up trailer, and now we have a big 36-footer. In summer of 2018, she was talking with Strausser, who regularly walks around the 60-spot campground on weekends to talk with campers. He said he had park improvement plans, but didn't know if he had enough money in the budget. I'm like, well, don't you have a friends group? And he said, no. I said, maybe we should start one, Bill said. The group's first event in the fall of 2018 drew about 150 people for winter prep, including staining and painting park buildings. Iowa State Parks, visited by up to 16 million people a year, need more than $100 million in repairs for fixing leaking roofs and rotting shelters and updating sewage lagoons, the Gazette reported this month. Iowa DNR Director Kayla Lyon has not asked the Iowa legislature for additional funding in recent years. The Iowa DNR plans to start the alignment process by moving Strausser and Katie Hoppner, the ranger at Lewis and Clark State Park near Onawa, to a hybrid status where they will be responsible for two counties each. Pete Hildreth, the agency's Conservation and Recreation Division Administrator, said in a March 22nd email to park employees, The Iowa DNR will replace Strausser and Hoppner with managers yet to be hired. The final vision is for all law enforcement staff to be classified as conservation officers, Hilders said in the email. They will be responsible for enforcing all fish and game laws, boating and OHV, which is off-highway vehicle laws, and other outdoor recreational laws, including in state parks, forests, and preserves. The changes will put all the agency's sworn peace officers into a single force housed in its Law Enforcement Bureau. The alignment is consistent with Governor Kim Reynolds' government reorganization plan passed last year, Krausman said. The plan is not designed to save money, she said. The changes are not expected to affect safety in the state parks, she said. It will be exactly as it is now, Krausman said. Anyone experiencing an emergency in state parks or any other public area should call 911. The dispatcher will direct the closest law enforcement to respond. This is not a change from current protocol. The DNR will rely on seasonal officers to enforce rules and laws during exceptionally busy times of the year, Krausman said. These are park managers, park technicians, and night security officers sworn in as temporary officers from April 15th to October 15th. These officers receive at least 24 hours of training, which includes 8 hours riding with a full-time sworn peace officer. Bill says seasonal officers are not enough, and sheriff's deputies and Iowa State troopers don't have the time to be a regular presence in the state parks. That's going to be the biggest problem with this merger, she said. I don't care what they call it, Michael. If you want to call him a conservation officer, or a park ranger, or I don't know, Santa Claus, I don't care. He needs to be a law enforcement officer in the park.
A hemp policy bill advances to the governor's desk. Iowa lawmakers have sent a bill heightening regulations on consumable hemp products to Governor Kim Reynolds' desk for her signature. The Senate signed off on House File 2605, which imposes a limit of 4 milligrams of tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, per serving in a consumable product, and no more than 10 milligrams per container, which would apply to popular drinks sold locally. It also imposes a 21-year-old age threshold to purchase the products. The bill ramps up regulations and penalties for violating Iowa's existing hemp possession, sales, or manufacturing laws, and prohibits synthetic THC. And consumable THC products will be required to have a warning label, much like alcoholic products. Senator Dan Dawson, Republican of Council Bluffs, said it desperately needed regulation for both the industry and consumers, and he cited the potency limits as a necessary distinction between recreational and medicinal use under Iowa's medicinal cannabidiol program. There has to be some type of guardrails on here, Dawson said. The bill passed the Senate 31-18 after receiving bipartisan support in the House earlier this month. Democrats did not speak on the Senate floor Tuesday, but those opposed to the legislation in the House said it would hamper both local businesses that sell THC products and Iowans who rely on them for medical reasons. This legislation will make it much more difficult for people in the state of Iowa, said Representative John Forbes, Democrat of Urbandale, during House debate. They're going to go out and buy this stuff online. They won't have a business they can go into. A previous version of the legislation, which included stricter potency limits, had spurred online advocacy efforts by Climbing Kites, a line of THC-infused sparkling water drinks developed by Loa Brewing and distributed by Big Bill Brewery.
And our next article on the front page of the Metro and Iowa section, surgeon surrenders medical license. West Des Moines doctor convicted of sex abuse. A Central Iowa physician who was criminally convicted of sexual abuse in February has agreed to the revocation of his medical license. Dr. Lynn Lindemann, a 73-year-old physician who practiced orthopedic surgery in West Des Moines before he was charged last year with two counts of second-degree sexual abuse, had previously signed an agreement with the Iowa Board of Medicine in which he agreed to suspend his practice while criminal charges against him were pending. Police allege that on June 26, 2023, Lindemann committed a sex act in Ankeny against a child born in 2015 by touching the child over the child's clothing. The next day, he allegedly touched that same part of the child through skin-to-skin contact, according to police records. In February, a jury found Linneman guilty of one count of sexual abuse in the second degree. The court dismissed a second count of sexual abuse prior to the trial. Sentence was yet to be imposed, according to court records. Separate from the criminal case and the license revocation, Linneman still faces a civil lawsuit brought by Sherry Moeller of Eldridge. She alleges that in July of 1975, when she was 14, she attended a gymnast summer sports camp at the University of Iowa, and Linneman, then 24, a counselor and athletic trainer at the camp, sexually assaulted her while treating an injury in her back. He was arrested and convicted in February 26 of 1976 of lascivious acts with a person under the age of 16. The Board of Medicine later licensed Linneman to work as an Iowa physician. When Moeller learned of that in 2020, she launched an unsuccessful effort to have the board restrict or revoke his license. After considering her complaint, the board voted to close the case without any public disciplinary action, and she filed a lawsuit against Linneman. Trial in the suit is scheduled for May of 2025. It is based on a new federal law that was passed by Congress and signed into law by President Joe Biden that allows sex abuse victims to sue their attackers decades after the fact. The Iowa Board of Medicine recently took action also in three other cases. Dr. Marjorie M. Renfro, the board, had alleged that while practicing in Grinnell, Renfro failed to meet applicable standards of care in 17 patient cases. The board fined Renfro $2,500 and restricted some aspects of her practice. It now has issued a termination order restoring Renfro's license to full privileges, free and clear of all restrictions. The order states that Renfro has successfully completed the terms of an August 11, 2022 order tied to charges of inappropriate pain management. In the case of Dr. Dara Parvin, the board issued a termination order in a case involving Parvin, a 58-year-old Iowa licensed physician who formerly practiced orthopedic surgery in Dubuque. In 2020, Parvin and the board entered into a settlement agreement after the board alleged Parvin had engaged in unprofessional conduct. According to the board, following the overconsumption of alcohol, Parvin sent suggestive social media messages to and made unwanted advances toward a female patient he had briefly seen in his office years before. The board also alleged Parvin sent suggestive messages to and made unwanted advances toward his co-workers. Under the terms of the settlement agreement, Parvin paid $1,500 civil penalty and was barred from using social media to contact patients or to make unwanted advances toward colleagues or co-workers. The board also placed Parvin on probation for a period of 2 years. The termination order approved last month restores Parvin's medical license to full privileges. And Dr. Zidong Wang. The board filed an undisclosed statement of charges against Wang on March 22nd. When asked for a copy of the charges earlier this week, officials at the Iowa Department of Inspections, Appeals, and Licensing said the document will most likely be made public next week. No reason was given for the delay.
And concluding Metro and Iowa News, man crashes into police car after an alleged high-speed chase. A Des Moines man was arrested and charged for allegedly leading Iowa State Patrol authorities on a high-speed chase and then crashing into a Des Moines police car on early Monday morning, according to court documents. David Reagan, 32, was first seen by an Iowa State Patrol trooper speeding near the intersection of University Avenue and East 14th Street at around 2:30 a.m., according to a criminal complaint. Reagan allegedly was driving 50 to 60 miles per hour in a 35-mile-per-hour zone. The trooper attempted to pull Reagan over, but he allegedly continued to flee from the trooper, the court document said. The trooper noticed Reagan swerving and weaving between the lanes. Reagan attempted to enter Interstate 235 from Guthrie Avenue, going in the wrong direction, the court document said. The trooper struck Reagan's car to prevent him entering the highway the wrong way. Reagan allegedly accelerated and hit a Des Moines Police Department vehicle in a head-on collision, the criminal complaint said. There were no reported injuries. Authorities asserted that Reagan had watery and bloodshot eyes and smelled like alcohol when he was taken into custody in the Polk County Jail, the court document said. Reagan allegedly told police that he used crack, according to the court document. Police found several empty containers of alcohol in Reagan's car. Reagan was previously convicted of eluding on March in March of 2022. Reagan was charged with the looting, operating while intoxicated, assault on a police officer, reckless driving, having an open container, and failing to respond to a red light, according to court documents. Reagan was being held at the Polk County Jail as of Monday afternoon. Police seek suspect in a recent Des Moines shooting incident. The Des Moines police asked the public Tuesday to be on the lookout for a man who was wanted in connection with a shooting that seriously injured two people in late March. Corey Shields, 25, of Des Moines, has an active arrest warrant for attempted murder, said Des Moines Police Department spokesperson Sergeant Paul Parisik. Evidence indicated that Shields fired the gunshots during a dispute outside of the Pure Social Club at 660 East 5th Street just before 2 a.m. on March 24th, Parisik said. Shields is 5'4" and weighs 115 pounds, Parisik said. Shields has face and neck tattoos. Anyone with information about Shields' whereabouts should contact their local police. Financial advisor is wanted in an alleged $1.5 million Waukee fraud. The FBI and Iowa Department of Insurance and Financial Services Fraud Bureau are seeking a Dallas County man charged with alleged wire fraud and money laundering. The U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Iowa has issued an arrest warrant for William Jack Berg, 51, who goes by Bill Berg. On its website, the FBI says Berg, a financial advisor in Waukee, who also has an address in Adel, allegedly defrauded more than a dozen clients in a scheme that cost them more than $1.5 million. Anyone with information concerning Berg, 51, is asked to contact the FBI's Omaha, Nebraska field office at 402-493-8688, their local FBI office, or the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate, or submit information at tips.fbi.gov. Iowans are urged to check investment officers with the Iowa Department of Insurance and Financial Services to verify whether an advisor is licensed. And the ash borer is now found in 98 of 99 Iowa counties. Emmett County in far northern Iowa is the lone remaining county in the state with no confirmed presence of an invasive beetle that kills ash trees, according to the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. On Monday, the department said the emerald ash borer was discovered in Palo Alto County for the first time in a tree in a public area near Emmitsburg. The East Asian beetle was first found in far northeast Iowa in 2010 and has since spread to all parts of the state. The beetle's larvae eat the living inner bark of ash trees and typically kill them within 2 to 4 years. The beetle spread has led some cities to remove still outwardly healthy ash trees in anticipation of their demise, or to attempt insecticide treatments to prevent it. State conservation officials have estimated there are about 55 million ash trees in Iowa before the beetle's arrival. The adult beetles are metallic green and about a half inch long. Ash trees that are infested often have fewer leaves, sprouts with leaves coming from lower parts of the trunk or main branches, and holes where the beetles emerge that are shaped like the letter D and about an eighth of an inch wide. Those are evidence of the emergence of the emerald ash borer in Emma County can call the state entomologist's office at 515-725-1470.
Powerball jackpot reaches $1 billion and is growing. If you missed out on the $1.13 billion Mega Millions jackpot prize, you're in luck. The Powerball stands at an estimated $1 billion and is growing. Both jackpots hit $1 billion in 1 week, according to the Iowa Lottery, with the Mega Millions jackpot claimed on March 26. The cash option for the Powerball is $527 million. Here's everything you need to know about the Powerball jackpot. When was the last Powerball jackpot won? New Year's Day was the last time the Powerball jackpot was claimed. Since then, the Mega Millions and the Powerball jackpots climbed together for nearly 3 months, topping $800 million simultaneously in March, according to a news release from the Iowa Lottery. Well, who won the Mega Millions jackpot? One ticket bought in New Jersey matched all six numbers to win the Mega Millions jackpot. 12 tickets matched all five numbers, except for the Mega Ball, worth $1 million. They were purchased in Florida, which two of them were, Georgia, two of them, New York, two of them, California, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. The Mega Millions jackpot now stands at an estimated $36 million as of April 2nd, with a cash option of $17 million, according to the Iowa Lottery website. What is the world record for the Powerball? The most the Powerball jackpot has hit was $2.04 billion in November of 2022. There is still time for the current jackpot to increase, according to Iowa Lottery. With Mega Millions being won, the bulk of the jackpot attention is now on the Powerball as it continues to climb, the release stated. While the jackpot is huge, it has room to grow before approaching record territory. How much is a Powerball ticket, and how do you play in Iowa? To win the Powerball jackpot, you must match all six winning numbers. It is $2 per play, but you can pay an extra dollar for a chance to expand your chance for non-jackpot winnings. What time and day is the Powerball drawing? Well, it's each Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday at 9:59 p.m. Central. The Powerball numbers are drawn. What is the cutoff time to buy Powerball tickets in Iowa? Tickets in Iowa can be purchased until 8:59 p.m. on the evening of the drawing, according to the Iowa Lottery. Winning numbers can be found at iowalottery.com. How much is the lottery jackpot after taxes? Well, in Iowa, 24% of any jackpot prize is withheld for federal taxes and 5% is withheld for state taxes, according to the Iowa Lottery. Those amounts are automatically deducted before the prize is paid, and there are no modifications or waivers to those withholdings. State and federal withholdings are intended to cover a winner's tax liability from claiming the large prize. However, the total taxes winners owe are dependent on the individual financial circumstances aside from the lottery earnings. In some cases, the withholdings may cover the tax liability, while other winners may have to pay more. The details for withholds must be sorted out in the winner's income tax filing for the year. Because each winner's financial situation is unique, the Iowa Lottery always encourages its winners to consult a lawyer or a financial planner who can help them map out a plan for their winnings.
Texas reports a first case of human case of bird flu. Less than a week after sick dairy cattle in Texas and Kansas tested positive for bird flu, Texas state officials reported that a person in the state has been infected with the virus after coming into close contact with infected cows. The Texas Department of State Health Services, in a news alert Monday, said the patient became ill following contact with dairy cows presumed to be infected with avian influenza, and that the person's primary symptom was conjunctivitis, also known as pink eye. Officials said that it is the first human case of the highly pathogenic strain of avian influenza in Texas, and the second in the U.S., and that is believed to be associated with recent detections of avian influenza in dairy cows. The news alert said federal and state health authorities are investigating the outbreak, but the risk to the general public is low. Quote, avian influenza viruses have only rarely been transmitted from person to person, authorities said. As such, the risk of the general public with close contact with affected animals suspected of having avian influenza have a higher risk of infection. The Texas Department of Health has issued a health alert to health care providers to be vigilant about the signs and symptoms of bird flu, especially among those who have regular contact with animals. Another U.S. case was detected in 2022 in a Colorado man after he helped clean an infected poultry facility. In 2023, a 9-year-old girl in Ecuador became ill after coming into contact with an infected backyard flock. And an 11-year-old girl in Cambodia died, and her father tested positive, though he was without symptoms. The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced on March 25th that the highly contagious pathogenic avian influenza virus had been found in unpasteurized clinical samples of milk from ill cows at two dairy farms in Kansas and one in Texas, plus a swab from a dairy cow in Texas. The agency said its officials, along with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, state veterinary, and public health authorities, were investigating an illness detected primarily in older dairy cows in those states, as well as in New Mexico. Wild migratory birds are believed to be the source of the infection, the USDA had said. Iowa, the nation's leading producer of eggs and a major turkey grower, is on a migratory flyway, and over the last 3 years, millions of birds in Iowa flocks, where the disease was detected, have been destroyed to prevent its spread. Bird flu is a disease caused by a family of flu viruses primarily transmitted among birds. Avian influenza viruses, according to the CDC and USDA, are classified into two groups, low pathogenic avian influenza, often seen in wild birds, and high pathogenic bird flu, found mostly in domestic poultry. According to the CDC, low pathogenic viruses cause mild or no disease, while the high pathogenic variety causes severe disease and high mortality rates in infected birds. Bird flu has cost the government roughly $660 million, and in recent times raised the price of eggs and poultry. At least 58 million birds were slaughtered last year to limit the spread of the virus. Signs and symptoms of bird flu, according to the Texas Department of State Health and Services, may include a fever of 100 degrees or greater, or feeling feverish or chilled, cough, sore throat, runny or stuffy nose, headaches, fatigue, eye redness or conjunctivitis, difficulty breathing or shortness of breath, diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, or seizures. Those infected with influenza may experience symptoms ranging from mild to severe, says the health department, explaining that reports of severe illness in humans have included fulminant pneumonia leading to respiratory failure, acute respiratory distress syndrome, septic shock, and even death. Information about Iowa's response to bird flu is available on the Iowa Department of Agriculture website at iowaagriculture.gov.
In more state news, surreal silence accompanies an eclipse. Animals are known to react in confusion. A total eclipse like the one happening on April 8th means the sun suddenly disappears at a time of day when it shouldn't, and that can have surprising effects on animal behaviors. During previous eclipses, people around the globe have noticed a surreal silence as birds, bugs, and animals interrupted their normal activities. And researchers have observed all sorts of unusual things at zoos. With a full solar eclipse coming in a large swath of the United States in April, scientists are gearing up to observe animals at multiple zoos in the path of the totality, in part because they were so surprised at what they discovered in 2017 during the last total solar eclipse in the U.S. "I thought it was going to be nonsense. I didn't think animals were going to be affected at all," said Adam Hartstone Rose, a professor of comparative anatomy at North Carolina State University. "Clouds pass over and they don't react. It was so ephemeral." For the 2024 eclipse, scientists will be watching the birds and the beasts and inviting citizen scientists to offer their observations as well as the celestial curtain falls. Pets, too, are being included in the surveys, though veterinarians say overall the biggest effect on their behavior will not be the sudden darkness, but rather the behavior of the humans around them. "They're going to react more to our reactions, our excitement and our anxiety than anything actually from the actual eclipse," said Dr. Renna Carlson, president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. To set up the study for the previous total solar eclipse, Hartstone Rose and his collaborators sent more than 40 people to watch 12 animal exhibits at the Riverbank Zoo and Garden in Columbia, South Carolina. They began a few days before the eclipse so that they could gauge how much the animals' behavior changed. It was a perfect place to do the experiment. At 2:41 p.m. on August 21st of 2017, the Greater Columbia area experienced the longest period of totality of any city on the East Coast, slightly more than 2 minutes and 30 seconds of total darkness. More than two-thirds of the animals exhibited changed behavior. Gorillas marched all together to be let in for the evening and were kind of perplexed, like, "Why aren't you letting us in?" Hartstone Rose said. Flamingos, all the adults, gathered around the perimeter and clumped around the juveniles and the babies. Giraffes, some of the zoo's herd, began running around their enclosure, only calming down when the sun came back. Bears, they couldn't care less. One of them lifted his head during the eclipse, but they basically couldn't be bothered to react. And Galapagos tortoises. The Riverbank Zoo has a group of 35 of the slow-moving giants, which can reach 900 pounds and live for more than 150 years. During the peak of the eclipse, they started breeding. For 2024, Hartstone Rose is scaling up animal observations across the country. There will be studies at multiple zoos in the path of the totality, which will allow a larger number of animals to be observed. He'll be stationed at Texas's Fort Worth Zoo. Given what they found out with the tortoises, he's curious to see what the bonobos will do. They're very sexual animals, he said. When they get stressed out, their reaction is to have sex. I'm very curious to see if they react by mating. Almost anyone who's been outdoors during an eclipse notices two things: the eerie light and the sudden silencing of birds and insects. Animals simply don't know what to do with eclipses because they're not something their biology is adapted for, said Andrew Farnsworth, a visiting scientist at the Cornell University Lab of Ornithology, who has studied bird behavior during eclipses. Eclipses aren't common, but they're not rare, and we humans can plan for them. But for short-lived animals that may not be tracking astronomy with math, it's pretty unexpected. In 2017, he and a group of researchers used radar to see just what the birds were doing during the eclipse, a project they plan to expand during this month's eclipse. Using 143 weather radar stations, they watched the behavior of several types of birds. Daytime soaring birds, raptors and such as turkey vultures and red-tailed hawks, tended to go to roost. They depend on the thermals off the sun's energy to soar, so when it gets dark, they head down to the earth because they expect the thermals to go away, he said. Birds that forage for insects during flight, such as swallows and purple martins, also leave the sky. They're foraging for insects while they're flying, but when night comes, there's a decline in their food source, so they can't see as well, he said. When Farnsworth and his collaborators watched radar images in 2017, the extent of bird behavior was surprising. For me, the take-home from the 2017 eclipse was the magnitude of the response we saw, he said. Their study shows huge clouds of birds that had been wheeling through the sky swooped down to the surface in numbers so large it showed up clearly on radar scans. This year, researchers plan on expanding the number of stations they are monitoring and expect to see the behavior across a much larger swath of the country, from Texas to Maine. To get the maximum number of eyes watching to see what animals do, there's also a citizen science project that will let people across the country gather information about what wild, farm, and domestic animals do. The project is called SolarEclipseSafari.org. Taking part won't interfere with people's eclipse experience, but will allow scientists to collate information about how animals react, both inside the totality and areas where there's only partial darkness. We're hoping to have thousands watching, he said. A NASA-funded study will also listen for the distinct quiet that falls when the sun is eclipsed and the animals fall silent. Americans will be invited to capture sound as part of the Eclipse Soundscape project. All the researchers USA Today interviewed had one piece of advice. The most important thing about an eclipse is to simply go outside and experience it. Don't fiddle with phones and cameras or computers the whole time. Just listen and look, said Farnsworth. It's easy to get wrapped up in technology. It's really important to do the observations with your eyes and ears, and to make the connection to nature that comes with it.
The pace of cutting carbon emissions doubles. The U.S. has doubled the pace of cutting carbon emissions since President Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act passed in 2022, analysts and scientists said, with more than 80 solar, wind, and energy storage projects taking advantage of the law's mix of direct payments and tax credits. The IRA and the bipartisan infrastructure law last year provided $239 billion for clean energy, electric vehicles, electrification of buildings, and carbon management in the U.S., up 38% from 2022, according to the Clean Investment Monitor, a joint project of the policy researcher Rhodium Group and MIT. Still, experts said there is a long way to go before the law can achieve Biden's wider climate ambition of net zero by 2050. Ultimately, analysts expect government direct spending and tax credits under the law will far exceed the initial $400 billion estimate. Goldman Sachs Group has projected up to $1.2 trillion spending through 2031. 2 years after passage of the landmark climate law, early winners have been sectors such as electrical power, battery manufacturing, and traditional clean energies like wind and solar. The law encouraged Asian and European companies to invest more in the U.S., which in turn prompted Europe to develop its own green industrial plan over worries the U.S. would pull away clean energy projects and talent. Still, state and government regulations have hindered development of new transmission lines, and new EV charging stations have not sprouted up as quickly as some had hoped. Also, the IRA has been much slower to encourage other types of projects, especially hydrogen, carbon sequestration, geothermal, and nuclear energy, known as Jagar Shah, head of the Loan Program's office at the Department of Energy. Those sectors continue to struggle around figuring out how exactly to put all the pieces together, Shaw said last month at the CERAWeek Energy Conference in Houston. Oil companies have bristled at the criteria for tax credits for hydrogen fuel plants. ExxonMobil Corporation Chief Executive Darren Woods warned in an interview that he might scrap a multi-billion-dollar plan to build the world's largest hydrogen plant in Texas. The challenge has been translating the legislation of the IRA into regulation, Woods said, noting the proposed regulation favors hydrogen fuel from plants powered by renewable energy rather than natural gas. Even in sectors like electric vehicles, companies are discovering a host of practical barriers to putting the IRA tax breaks to work, said Jason Bordoff, founding director of the Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia University. For instance, he cited a lack of transmission lines that would connect new clean energy projects to the grid and local content requirements for EVs. Tax breaks for EV purchases under the law have U.S. automakers worried about cheap Chinese vehicles flooding the market, triggering rules for U.S. content and calls in Washington for steeper tariffs. China has protested U.S. content rules on EVs to the World Trade Organization. Concern about Asian companies cornering the market on advanced technology needed for EVs and other green energy items also prompted Washington to launch aggressive investments in semiconductor plants. Some parts of clean energy, like electric vehicles, have become particularly politicized. There could be a risk that the implementation of the IRA by the administration could be slowed down, Bordoff said. So far, a $7.5 billion U.S.-funded network of electric vehicle charging stations has led to only a handful of stations, despite a temporary waiver of U.S. content rules. Regulatory hurdles have hindered advancement of complex projects favored by oil companies, such as hydrogen plants or carbon capture systems for oil wells, noted Roman Kamarskik, head of climate markets and policy analytics for S&P Global Commodity Insights. He predicted these projects would see a second wave of development when there is more certainty around how that financing is supposed to happen or what it takes to get a deal done. Oil executives at the conference in Houston also complained that regulations were making it difficult to build new natural gas pipelines, which undercut efforts to remove gas from drilling sites. Now, a proposed IRA-linked fee for excess methane emissions on federal land has raised a new hurdle, ConocoPhillips Chief Executive Ryan Lance said, adding that industry is pushing back on that issue. Despite the various industry complaints, the climate law has helped the U.S. reduce carbon emissions by 4% annually, double the pace of 2% a year before the law, nine research teams across the country said last year in an article in the journal Science. Still, some experts say the pace must accelerate. The IRA doubles the pace of reductions, but should have tripled it to hit our 2030 climate goals and get on the path to net zero by 2050, said Jesse Jenkins, a Princeton Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering professor and one of the study participants.
Trump posts $175 million bond to shield assets. Judge in hush money case expands the gag order. Former President Donald Trump and several co-defendants in a New York civil fraud case posted a $175 million bond Monday after an appeals court ruled they didn't have to come up with $454 million in order to block New York Attorney General Letitia James's from seizing their assets. Judge Arthur F. Engoron imposed the approximately $454 million judgment, which includes interest, after concluding Trump got better loan and insurance terms by fraudulently inflating the value of his assets over several years. Trump's sons Eric and Don Jr. also faced judgments totaling more than $9 million, and former Trump Organization executive Alan Weisselberg was ordered to pay over $1 million. Assistance arrived just in time for the former president. On his March 25 deadline to come up with deposits or a bond to stave off James, a New York appeals court ruled he and his co-defendants could have an additional 10 days to post just $175 million to shield themselves from collection. The shield lasts until Trump's appeal runs out. The bond was provided by Knight Specialty Insurance Company, which has its principal place of business in Los Angeles, but meets New York's requirements to guarantee the bond is paid, according to a Monday court filing. The help came after Trump, the business entities, and the two sons told a New York appeals court on March 18th that getting a $464 million bond to cover their judgment was, quote, a practical impossibility. They said in a filing that they went to 30 bonding companies and not one would cover a bond that size without collateral in the form of cash or cash equivalents. Obtaining such cash through a fire sale of real estate holdings would inevitably result in massive irrecoverable losses, they told the appeals court. They pleaded for an order blocking James from collecting during their appeal without having to post a bond. Also on Monday, in a separate New York court case, Trump was hit with a wider gag order after repeatedly targeting the judge's daughter in social media posts. In that case, Trump faces 34 felony counts of falsifying business records to cover up hush money payments made to an adult film actress, Stormy Daniels, before the 2016 presidential election. The trial is set to begin on April 15th with jury selection. The late Monday order from Judge Juan Merchan blocks Trump from making public statements about family members of the judge or Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg if the statements are meant to significantly interfere with work in the case. Merchan previously issued a similar gag order when it came to statements about court staff, other prosecutors, and family and their families. Trump's post over the past weekend attacked the judge's daughter, Lauren Merchan, as a, quote, rabid Trump hater, and referred to her role leading a market agency that works with Democratic candidates and nonprofits. They also included a photograph of her. The New York State Advisory Committee on Judicial Ethics determined last May that the judge's impartiality could not reasonably be questioned based on his daughter's work, stating that the case doesn't involve her business, directly or indirectly. In expanding his earlier gag order, Merchant said Trump's attacks on a family member of a judge or a prosecutor amount to a, quote, a direct attack on the rule of law itself. Merchant also warned Trump that any legal right he has access to juror names would be forfeited if he engaged in any conduct that threatens the safety and the integrity of the jury or the jury selection process.